Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on Garden Talk. And we today are going to talk about trees on the show. Have you got some trees? Got some questions about maybe planting one or other questions? You will get your answers here during our fall member drive. As a matter of fact, you count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations. We count on you to keep these discussions on the air. Jill Nadeau joining me today. And Jill, I've heard something that just amazed me. It had to do with listener support.
Really? Well, I'm here to tell you, Larry, that listener support is the largest piece of funding that makes this show and all the others that you enjoy possible. And that's why your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
And thank you if you've already given. And since my screen went dark, I can't tell you how many we have.
What our goal is.
But we have a goal.
Oh, I think it's 15.
15 or so. Okay.
I don't know. No, it hasn't updated. That was last hour. It looks like they went over theirs, so that's good.
And why do we have these goals?
Well, we have these goals because they help us stay on track financially, Larry. So, you know, everybody gets paid and we do a great job. And so we can keep these discussions going strong on the Ideas Network. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here we are on public radio. And what does that mean? Public radio means listener-supported radio.
It does. And while we do, of course, appreciate business contributions and federal and state tax dollars, it's the listener support that's the largest source of funding for WPR programs. So that's why your contribution of any amount, it matters at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio, I think it's your radio station, the one that wakes you up in the morning, maybe rides with you on your commute, and keeps you company during the day.
It certainly does. And the beauty of WPR is that you get to decide how much to pay for the programs that you enjoy. So many first-time donors will give $100 or maybe $10 a month. The thing is that you get to pick the amount that's right for you.
And your gift, along with donations from other listeners, add up to WPR's largest source of funding. So, hey, why not join the team right now? Make your gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Well, I think it's an investment in your own brain. I mean, I'm a retired person now, and as you get older, you do realize you need to keep your brain flexible. And even when I was younger, it's good to keep your brain flexible. And investing in public radio, in Wisconsin public radio, really helps me to keep my brain up to date and gives me different ideas and different viewpoints. Wisconsin public radio is my source for a better life.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution during our fall member drive. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. And here to tell you that the WPR programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support. And your contribution could be $10 a month, could be $100 a month, could be $200, whatever amount you choose. Makes a difference for all of us.
It certainly does. And Larry, working with you makes my brain flexible too. So thank you for that. And also, you know, if you want to do something easy for your brain, give at to WPR. And that's super easy. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say $10 a month.
And that donation comes back to you every day in the form of engaging programs. So why not show your support right now during Garden Talk? You can go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
And Larry, I did get to refresh my screen, and it looks like our goal for this hour is 25 gifts, and we've already gotten 3 because we have the best listeners.
They're smart and good looking.
They are.
And how do they do that, though? How did those 3 do it?
Well, all they had to do was call 888-202-2552, or you can go online at WPR.org.
That's the way to do it. You can support Garden Talk when you give a gift of $15 a month for WPR, and you can ask for those new WPR socks. We've been, they're navy and gold socks, and Jill and I have been spending hours planning our our party for those who buy the socks, and if they show up wearing the socks.
That's right, WPR Sock Hop.
I'm setting up the first round here of pop, beer, coffee, whatever you want. So you want to get in on that party, take the step today. Get $15 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And like Marian Waukesha says, we have listened to Larry Mueller's show for years. It is just superb. I like that word,
like
superb.
That.
And Stan in Santa Fe says, though I now live in New Mexico, I still rely on WPR for my daily goodness.
Superb and superb. Daily goodness. It's weird, and it's a weird goodness. Let's put it that way. Your gift is powerful. Really makes a difference at WPR.org at 888-202-2552. Thanks very much if you've already contributed. If you haven't, do it right now as we talk with our guest about trees. Paul Segan is a forest health specialist with the Wisconsin DNR, and he covers the northwest region of the state. And he'll be answering your questions. Remember talking with Paul in Bayfield when we were up for Bayfield in Bloom in June. He does such a wonderful job. So how have your trees been doing since Paul was last on the phone with us? Do you have questions? I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Paul Segan, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Larry. I'm glad to be here and hoping to take some good questions today from folks, seeing how their trees have been since we last spoke here.
Yeah, it's, tell you what, every line is filled, so let's go to the phones. And Pete in Berlin, we'll go to you first. Hi, Pete.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a question for you, actually two questions. One is peach trees. What can I do to optimize the health of these over the winter? I had some which I planted. After about the third year, they finally gave me an incredible crop of peaches, and they all died. And so I planted some new ones now, same thing. I've had 2 years of nothing, and then one this present year has been very, very good, and I'd like to keep these alive.
Yeah.
And the other question would be just around health of new plantings in general. I had a bunch of cedars and oaks I planted in the spring. Is there anything I should do now in the fall to make sure that they stay healthy through the winter?
Okay.
Thank you.
A couple of good questions there. What do you think, Paul?
Well, it's a good question, Pete. You know, one of the parts of success with these plantings is how you prepare that site, making sure that you prepare the site by making sure any competitive vegetation is dealt with ahead of time. That could be through mechanical means. If there's turf grass in the area, making sure that that is managed and gotten rid of, peeling back that turf. And also sometimes chemical means can be used to try to control competing vegetation. So you want to give that planting a success by beating back some of that competitive vegetation. From there, mulching and making sure that you keep sufficient amounts of water around that planting is a good idea. Mulching with new plantings is typically recommended at anywhere from about 2 to 4 inches of mulch that goes out as far as the drip line of the planting. So the drip line is equivalent to how far out the branches reach on each side. So you're looking at mulching a distance that far out with anywhere from 2 to 4 inches of mulch, more on the 2 end if you're talking about more of a clay type soil. If it's more of a sandy, lighter soil, maybe you can make that mulch layer a little bit thicker. And making sure not to push that mulch up against the tree stem, as that can cause some pathogen issues over time. This mulch is going to serve a couple of purposes. It's going to make sure that that tree has a little bit better, more breathing going on with the root system and with the atmosphere, and then a little bit more water retention from the mulch. Mulch could be anything from shredded cedar and bark types of material, or it could even be shredded leaf material from oaks or other types of deciduous species. Those can make good mulches. Sometimes what we see is an issue with sun scald. That's a problem with young plantings, could be oaks, it could be even peach, where there's too much sunlight that's being exposed on one part of the, usually the south side of the stem. And so occasionally wrapping trees with a type of tape to deflect some of that sunlight can be helpful to prevent that sun scald, which is the result of heavy warming during winter days from the sun and then cooling off at night, which can cause some damage on that southern side. So that can be a good idea. And then the other thing I'd recommend as far as fruit trees go, these trees, is to look at some of the UW Extension resources. They've got a number of different pages that discuss proper pruning techniques for fruit trees specifically, and that gets into a little bit different camp than what I typically work with, because I don't deal as much with orchards, but their resources have quite a bit of information that that Pete could look at on the UW Extension Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, for example.
Yeah, Pete, there's a lot there, and there I love the diagrams. They have some really good photos of how to do pruning, for example, especially when it comes to fruit trees where you want to kind of open that canopy up and need to do it the right way. So I hope that helps. What and peach trees, we don't, we have, well, how should I say this? We don't have great success always with peach trees. Usually Pete's got sort of the perfect example there, where he had a great crop for a year and had the trees for 3 years, and then they died. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you got to, I guess you got to have to take the good with the bad, or maybe look at a different kind of fruit. But I know peaches, I would like to have peaches, peach tree, but I don't. Pete, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Don in Bayfield County, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi, what's the best time to grow plant apple trees?
When to plant apple trees in Bayfield County?
Well, generally, fall is a great time to be planting trees, probably apple trees as well. We start to get into that period where we're getting a couple of frosts that are coming across our landscape. We've certainly had frost up here in Bayfield County. So now would be a time to start to consider that. And again, looking at your site, considering what kind of restrictions you have with competing vegetation, what sort of soil type you have would be a good idea. If you haven't done a test or to have a accredited lab do a soil test, that would be a good idea to see if there's any limitations. But I think now would be a good time.
All right. There you go, Don. Thank you. Joel in Friesland, we'll go to you. Hi, Joel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call today. It's nice to be able to ask this question. I bought this house 2 years ago, and probably should have done a little bit more checking, but I got 7 really large trees. They're all close to buildings, including my house, and I can't afford to have them cut down. I had an estimate just for one tree, and it was $10,000.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's any services or help, or if you can recommend a tree service that could at least just drop them, and you know, I can cut them up in my yard at my leisure. But you know, I just can't get up that height that high and do the topping of the tree.
Yeah.
Kind of dangerous.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Joel. It's a good question though. As far as I know, there's no state assistance or county assistance to help people remove trees in their yard. But it would make sense to maybe have a certified arborist come take a look at those trees and determine if they are exhibiting any conditions that might make them more or less risky for failure up against a wind, or perhaps the tree has a cavity or it's got some disease and that can be identified. That might help you prioritize which of those trees makes more sense if you ultimately have to have one of them removed. But yeah, that's a tricky situation, and unfortunately you might be up against having to decide which ones have to go, and maybe you do it over time and absorb some of the cost over the course of 5 or 10 years if the trees are generally in good health at this point. But, yeah, there's
a
wide variety of certified arborists that Joel could or that he could look into. The DNR hosts a webpage that's got a list of certified arborists that cover his area that could come out and do an evaluation on those trees and potentially also be hired for services of removal or anything of that sort.
Yeah. Joel, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call and good luck. Appreciate it very much. Paul Segan, our guest today, forest health specialist with the Wisconsin DNR, with us on Garden Talk during our fall member drive. Larry Mueller here and Jill Nadeau joins us as well, here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your future WPR listening.
And that is because listener support makes up the largest piece of funding for the programs that you count on. Programs like The Larry Mueller Show. And that's why your gift now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
So we've got about 28 minutes or so left in this hour, and we're looking for, what, about 20, 21?
19, actually.
19 more people to join in. When you give, you fund Garden Talk, The Larry Mueller Show, and all the other WPR programs that you count on. So good idea would be to give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, there are so many things to love about Wisconsin. It really is a beautiful state. The parks, the forests, and rivers, they're some of the best things about living here.
I like to think of WPR as part of what makes Wisconsin special, like a natural resource, something that's available to everybody, something that is fundamental to life here in our state. And with your gift, you keep WPR a strong resource that everyone can enjoy. And that's why I hope you'll contribute right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, we've heard that from a lot of listeners, Larry, that they leave Wisconsin, but they still listen to WPR. There's a reason for that. So whether you've given before or, you know, maybe you're making your first ever donation, how exciting, sign up for ongoing monthly gifts.
Yeah, choose the amount that works for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Only takes a couple of minutes, and once it's set up, your support for the programs you value is always current.
It's $5 Friday. Today only, make a difference for your community and get the new WPR tote bag when you give $5 a month for the WPR programs you love. With a vibrant navy and orange design, this USA-made cotton tote is the perfect way to let the world know WPR is your source for information and inspiration. This offer is only available today, $5 Friday. Ask for your tote bag now when you give $5 a month or more. Here's how.
Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. This is the Fall Member Drive. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Listener support's the biggest source of funding for our shows that you rely on, and that's why your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, has an important impact.
It certainly does. And it's $5 Friday. I love that. That's a great deal for a tote bag, Larry. I mean, you could... I might actually have to add $5 to my monthly giving to get that tote bag. You like the socks? I like the tote bag.
I've already added for the socks. I suppose I could add for the tote bag, too.
Well, you have to have something to carry your socks in. And we've only got, 35 minutes left, and we still need those 19 gifts. So please join in. And thank you if you've already given. We appreciate that.
But if you haven't, you could give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we ask that you make a contribution, and then when you do, that you give the amount that's comfortable for you. Many people just give $10 a month, or some will give $100 a month. It just depends on what's great for your budget.
But whatever amount you give, you know it's going to support the programs that enhance your life, give you information like today's show here on Garden Talk, and we hope we provide a little entertainment every day. So give now. Whatever amount works for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Suzanne and Downing said a nice thing about me.
She did. She said, I love the Larry Mueller Show. I'm a monthly sustainer, but wanted to give a little more. Oh, but she's getting that tote bag. Thanks for all you folks do. Thank you, Suzanne.
Your gift right now is so important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and thank you. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Paul Segan, forest health specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. He covers the northwest region of the state, but here to answer your tree questions, and I hope you'll join in. Number's 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Hillary in Milwaukee next. Hi, Hillary.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Thanks for having me. I just had a question about a tree in our new yard. We just purchased a home in Milwaukee, and our south-facing yard has a maple tree.
Yeah.
It's got the branches are sort of coming out. There aren't like main big branches that are then branching out further up the tree. I'm not sure what this is called, but it has like a lot of smaller straight branches coming out. And the leaves are a really pale green, almost a white. Towards the top of the tree, it looks like it's a little bit healthier with some darker green leaves that are starting to turn now. But most of the leaves are sort of this pale white. It doesn't look super healthy, and I'm wondering if you know what that could be and how we could mitigate that.
So this maple tree, just has branches starting sort of at the base of the trunk and going all the way up the tree?
About maybe five feet up is when the branches start coming out.
Okay. Paul, comment?
This gets a little bit tricky because without seeing the tree specifically, it's hard to know what's going on with it. And so what I often do in these cases is recommend that folks take a photo or several sets of photos and then send them to either their local extension office or to the plant disease diagnostic clinic, who can look and review these photos and give a potential diagnosis. You know, with the specific things that Hillary's talking about, a little bit of pale green color, it's called chlorosis, and some unusual branching architecture, there could be a number of things that are both abiotic, non-related to an insect or a pathogen, that are causing that, but they certainly could be something related to an infection or an infestation of the tree. And so it gets a little bit difficult to determine, but I think that probably photos to your local UW Extension office would be the first route, and if they determine that you might need some more information, they could probably help you follow up with the disease diagnostic clinic for more information. As well, you could also look at contacting a certified arborist to have a look at that tree. Off the top of my head, there's nothing that really rings a bell with that kind of character that Hillary's describing.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what it'd be, you know, if the maple, the leaves are dark toward the top but lighter in the bottom. I thought, well, I wonder if they're getting enough sun, but would that ever have an impact, Paul?
Well, it sounds like it's on the south side of the yard. If it's got plenty of, you know, maybe the absence of sunlight could cause a little bit of a loss of vigor in the tree, but probably not. I can't see why a little bit of shading would cause that.
Okay. So, and sending a photo off to the master gardener or to the Milwaukee County Extension office. Certainly would be probably a longer photo and then some close-ups of the leaves. Or you could probably even just send them directly to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and they could typically they'll take a look and let you know what they think.
Yep.
Yeah. So there you go, Hillary, and it's easy to find the UW. If you just type in UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, it would show up too. Thanks very much for calling. Rosemary in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi. We have a magnolia tree that blossomed beautifully in the spring. And then, of course, the blossoms fell off. And then there was a storm, so we had to cut one branch off. And suddenly, about a month or a month and a half ago, it started blossoming again. Now, the blossoms aren't open, but it's getting cold. Is this going to affect the way it blossoms in spring?
That is a good question, Rosemary. I suppose it's possible that you could get some, if those buds are not hardened off for this winter period, it's possible that they could be susceptible to some frost damage and could be killed in a couple of subsequent frosts that we face, and maybe the blooming could be affected next year. I've not dealt with magnolias closely, so it's hard to say, but that would be a good question for someone like your UW Extension agent who works with ornamental trees. I would have to probably recommend you try to contact the local Extension office on a question like that. I think it's possible, though, based on where we are in the season and having that fresh, tender growth up against the frost.
Yeah, I think it's a problem. Lisa Johnson is the Dane County horticulture agent. You might give Lisa a call, but I think it's a problem. Yeah, they're if they bloom a second time, a magnolias typically don't bloom again, Jill's saying, shaking her head no. So something to consider. Thank you for calling. Stephanie in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Listen, I have a regular size lot here, so it's probably about 20 yards across in my back. I want to plant a ginkgo tree, but my neighbor on one side has a black walnut that's pretty tall, and its canopy probably covers half the yard. Do you think a ginkgo would survive if I planted it on the other half of that yard?
I think so. I think the ginkgo, let's see here, it would be sort of based on the shade tolerance of the ginkgo. I think the ginkgo is generally sun-loving, but would the, Stephanie, would the ginkgo foreseeably have, you know, 50% full sunlight? Would half of the tree be exposed to sunlight roughly?
Yeah, it would get pretty good sun.
I think it shouldn't be a problem. I think the bigger concern when we're talking about something like a black walnut is the allelopathic effect that the black walnut can have. These black walnuts can release some types of anti-growth types of compounds into the soil. And when you try to grow plants around them, those plants can be really inhibited in growing well. And so as long as it's, say, you know, say it's away from the drip line, roughly like 20 feet away from that black walnut, it probably should be fine. And I think sunlight-wise, it shouldn't be an issue. So I don't foresee a problem with that.
Okay. There you go, Stephanie. Thanks for calling. Jeff and Barry Mills, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. I had a question about a couple of years ago. I was on a ridgetop land in northern La Crosse County about this time of year, and all the white oak trees, and I'm not sure if it was the red oaks too or not, had these little puffy growths on them, not much bigger than the size of a pea, but they were fuzzy. And I just, the ground was loaded with them, and you could see them growing out of the twigs at the very leaf tips.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me like it could have been some type of gall that was growing on the twigs of these oaks. You said they were on the ground? These growths and the twigs had fallen to the ground?
Yeah, they had fallen to the ground, but there were still lots of them still hanging on the branches.
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry, I don't know. That sounds to me like it was some kind of gall. I know there's a couple of fuzzy white-looking galls that can inflict the oaks. So that would be my guess, but I didn't hear about anything at, like, kind of an outbreak scale of anything like that. And typically galls are not something we would be concerned about from a tree health standpoint. They're usually more of an aesthetic interest than a problem. But, yeah, that's about all I can think of what that would
be. Yeah, I think it's a gall, too. Yeah. Jeff, thanks for calling. Irene in Lake Mills, your turn. Hi, Irene.
Good morning. I would like to know if you can trim hickory trees. My hickory trees have grown really, really tall, and I'd like to trim them back. Is it possible to?
How do you want to? Did you have a idea of trimming them from the top, or right. How did you? What were you?
Well, anyway.
Any way you could. Okay. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I think we're getting into that period where we should be, as people who own trees, thinking about pruning. Now is a good time that we've had a hard frost, at least up here in the Northland. Not sure if we've had one down in southern Wisconsin, but
no.
Once we've had so maybe it's time to wait a little bit longer for your hickories down in southern Wisconsin. But once we've had a couple of hard frosts, it's a good time to start thinking about pruning. And if you're talking about a larger hickory, you're obviously going to be looking at getting some assistance to do that. And like I had mentioned, the DNR hosts a page with certified arborists who can help with trimming trees of that sort. And things we want to look at are trying to get good architecture of the tree. We want to prune a tree in such a way that we can improve the overall branch structure to make those branches stronger in the long run, make the growth a little bit more vigorous. And also, in some cases, we're clearing out some of the branches so that we get better airflow in the tree so that we're less prone to diseases over time. So absolutely a good idea to prune your hickory. I would do so with the assistance of a professional. And now is a good time to start thinking about getting that work scheduled out once we've had a good hard frost or two down there.
Yeah. Irene, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, the number to call. Terry in Milton will go to you next. Hi, Terry.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good show as always, Larry.
Thank you.
I have about a dozen spreading arborvitae trees. They're about 30 feet tall now. They're on the north side of the house, and they were put there for protection from the wind and snow. And I was wondering, when's the best time that I can trim them? They're starting to grow in toward the house a little too much. I'm trying to see if I can trim them up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good question, Terry. Again, just like with Irene's question, once we've had a good frost or two, it's a good time to start thinking about pruning those arborvitae. You know, arborvitae are going to have generally fairly thick crown. There's going to be not a lot of airflow going in. So one consideration might be to kind of lighten up that crown a little bit, prune some branches that allow for a little bit better air circulation in the arborvitae. And generally, we're looking at now and into the early winter is a really good time, too, to prevent any insect or disease issues that might come to those wounded trees. You know, one of the things with trimming and pruning is that we technically are wounding the tree, but we're wounding it for the overall benefit that in the longer run, that the tree's going to have better structural integrity. It's going to be less prone to disease. And so when we're doing that, we want to, though, time it so we're not making that injury occur when it could be infected by an insect or disease. So now is a good time. Again, there's a whole lot of information online on the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. I went through some of their pages, and Brian Huddleston has put together just a wealth of different information on pruning, as well as some diagrams on there that Larry mentioned. And I would really recommend going on to there, learning more about best techniques for pruning, because there's a lot of information that you can pick up there.
And Terry, thanks very much for calling. So UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic is where you can just punch that into your search engine and you'll find it. Right during our fall member drive, you could do it as a matter of fact. And Jill Nadeau joining me again. You count on the Ideas Network for great talk, and it's your gift, any amount that makes discussions possible. Listener support is the largest source of funding for our shows, and that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
It certainly is. And we do have about 20 minutes left, and we have 11 more gifts that we are looking for to make our goal of 25. So please make your gift of support for the programs that you enjoy and rely on every day.
WPR programs are listener-powered, and that means that your donation right now makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you're a regular listener at Garden Talk, or even if you just tuned in for the first time today, I'll bet you just learned a lot of information that is going to be really important to you, like when to prune, because if you prune in the wrong time, you could have some problems. And this is the kind of information that we give here at WPR. And the reason that we can give it to you is because we've had listeners like you who help support us. So that means that when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour and all the other hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Just take a few minutes and make your gift.
Once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for. And on this Garden Talk show, I'm going to say I'm going out on a limb now.
Oh, Larry.
one place.
You're barking up the wrong tree.
I'm barking up the right tree here, because WPR is one place where that's true every day. Consider a gift maybe of $2 a day to support the radio programs you love.
That's right, because those puns were worth $2 a day. And besides, you know, it's hard to buy much for $2, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day makes a lot of news, talk, and music possible. And that works out to $60 a month. And you can make that gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Lance from Madison.
And I'm Cheryl.
When did we become sustaining members? Cheryl, I'm trying to remember. It's been quite a while.
Maybe it was about the same time that I moved here. So we've probably been sustaining members of WPR for about 10 years. We had each supported public radio in our respective states. And when I was an Iowa resident, I supported Iowa Public Radio and Lance supported Wisconsin Public Radio. And so I think when I moved here to Wisconsin, to Madison, we just pooled our efforts and decided to become sustaining members because we realized what a big part of our everyday life WPR had become. And felt morally obligated to help support the programming.
Feel good and make a difference right now at WPR.org.
That's right. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. And your support during our drive makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. And your gift could be 10 or 20 bucks a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
Wisconsin has access to quality news, talk, and entertainment because 50,000 individuals and households choose to support WPR.
Wisconsin Public Radio works on the honor system, so you can join this team effort with your gift right now of, say, $10 a month. You decide the amount and then make your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Just a little over 15 minutes to go, and we are still looking for 11 more people to join in. You make WPR possible when you give, and you can go to WPR.org or 888-202-20... Oh my gosh, I can't read anymore. 888-202-2552.
Kristen in Eagle River says, I'm thankful for your coverage of environmental and nature topics.
And Kristen Madison says, I'm a longtime sustainer. I listen every day, and I love Larry.
Thank you, Chris. Your gift is very powerful. It really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and thank you. Taking a look at your trees today on the program on this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest Paul Segan, forest health specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. He covers the northwest region of the state, and I hope you'll join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas at WPR.org. Let's take another call. Todd in De Pere, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have Carpathian walnut trees, 12 to 15 feet tall. They resemble bushes more than trees, and I'm just wondering when to prune them to look more like trees.
That is a good question. I'm not familiar with that species, but part of me wonders if maybe its natural growth habit is a little bit more spreading, and so there might be some limitation in promoting more of a kind of an upright tree type of structure. Larry, are you familiar with that one? I'm not familiar with Carpathian walnut.
Northern edible walnut it produces. And I'm not familiar with it either. Should just go by another name? I don't know. Does it, Todd?
I'm sorry. The cell phone's cutting out. I didn't quite hear that.
Oh, I just wondered, what's the species of walnut?
I believe Carpathian. It's walnut, resembles an English walnut. I have not had nuts yet. I'm forward to them, but I'd like to resemble them as trees more than bushes.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. So I did find it here. It looks like it should have a normal growth structure, kind of an upright, rounded crown, spreading and open. So if you want to promote that growth, you're going to want to focus on getting some of the lower limbs pruned out. That typically is going to promote a little bit more upward growth. We call that apical dominance in a tree. So you're going to want to focus on how big are these trees? Like, what would be the diameter right now, Todd?
The very base of the trunk probably 4 inches in diameter, but maybe 8 inches up. They start branching, heavy branches coming out, and they resemble large bushes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so one thing I would think about doing there is looking at some of those lower branches that are contributing to some of that wider spread and start to take some of those off, but probably do it in over a course of time. What we generally recommend is to not prune out more than 30% of the branches that have leaves on them in any given year. Because again, like I said, pruning is wounding a tree, but it's wounding with the idea of making the tree better in the long run or promoting some benefit that we're looking for. And so, but not violating that kind of 30% rule is a great way to not overstress the tree. But in doing that there, Todd, you're going to want to take out probably 30% of those lower limbs and try to promote more of an upright form by allowing the upper branches that are already kind of maybe having precedent over the crown to let those be promoted over the long run. And that should hope to push that crown upright a little bit more. At some point, you're going to lose some control over it because it might get too tall to prune effectively unless you were to get a lift or something up there. But I think if it's manageable and within arm's reach with a pruner, I would start to remove some of those lower limbs.
There you go, Todd. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kel in Sugar Camp, your turn. Hi, Kel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if the recent scientific information about how trees share nutrients and communicate with each other with the rhizomatous fungi underground, if that's changing the way we harvest our state forests. And also, are we doing any experimentation with genetic equivalents that are more southern of our trees to see if we can start replacing trees that aren't going to be able to handle global warming with trees that can't?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question, Kel. You're very forward thinking in that. There's very fascinating area of research in trees, tree ecology, forest ecology that's looked at that communication you're talking about, mediated through root systems and mediated through fungi that live in the soil. And what we have found through research is that trees do have levels of communication where there is nutrient and carbon or sugar sharing between trees of both the same species and of different species. So it's a very interesting way of looking at the forest that we really didn't understand probably up to about 10 or 15 years ago. As to the question of whether it's changed how we implement timber harvest treatments in the state, I'm not aware that it has, but there's certainly a growing appreciation of the complexity of these below-ground networks and this communication and resource sharing and how these networks may relate to things such as forest regeneration following a harvest and how it relates to the value of retaining sometimes older, larger trees, which we call hub trees. So I don't know if any of that's made it into specific guidance we have in harvesting in the state, but it's certainly something that scientists are in the DNR have looked at and do most likely consider when we're looking at altering some of our guidance over the long run to incorporate new scientific information. With regard to the question of the genetic variety in certain species, we are looking at changing weather patterns that have been already demonstrated and that are projected for the future. And so it makes sense in forestry to start to look at whether or not, say, a red maple might have a type of genetic variety that might do a little bit better in the north because it's got – we're maybe looking at warmer weather up north, and we've got a red maple variety that could do good in warmer weather. And so that's absolutely something that we're looking into. It's generally called there's things called assisted migration, for example, where we're looking at varieties that might be well adapted to the north, or even certain species that may not have occurred in the north historically, but may prove to be potential valuable components and species in that northern forest as it continues to change. And so, yeah, absolutely, genetic equivalence, breeding trials, looking at genetic resistance to different diseases that might become more prevalent. Those are all things that are incorporated into the science when we look at managing forests in Wisconsin.
Cal, thank you so much. Let's turn to Kent in Presque Isle. Hi, Kent.
Hi, Larry. This is Kent. I have a question regarding white pines. I have a number of white pines that we put in 8-9 years ago. They're 20 to 30 feet high. Unfortunately, I'm getting a lot of raspberry bushes spread underneath them, and every year about this time I have to pull them out. And I understand that there is a disease, a white pine disease, that's caused by a spore from a gooseberry, or actually the white pine gives it to the gooseberry, and the gooseberry can then give it to other white pines. And I'm wondering, is... raspberry bushes, would that be the same? Could that happen with raspberry bushes rather than just gooseberries?
That is a great question, Kent. I think what you're talking about, Kent, with that disease of white pine is white pine blister rust. It's a common disease of white pine that we've had in Wisconsin for a long time, and it's probably one of the bigger limiting factors of white pine that we face in forest. But a lot of white pine survive, and it's usually not a major problem. With regard to whether or not raspberry is what you're describing as an alternate host for the white pine blister rust, the answer is no. White pine the white pine blister rust does not use raspberry as a host, but it does use the gooseberry. So to the extent that you might actually see gooseberry or know of or can find gooseberry or ribes species on your property, removal of that can actually reduce the incidence of white pine blister rust. But raspberries growing under the white pine are probably not much more than competition for that white pine. And so removing them may not have a benefit for blister, will not have a benefit for blister rust. It could have a benefit in reducing some of the competition-induced stress that white pine faces. So, yeah.
All right. There you go, Kent. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Paul Segan from the Wisconsin DNR, as we talk trees, and one of my favorite tree experts is Jill Nadeau, who has always a lot of good information about trees. And she's here to help me tell you that the largest source of funding for our shows comes from listeners like you. And here we are getting to the top of the hour for Garden Talk. And this drive is your chance to support Garden Talk and all the programs you listen to throughout the year. So if you haven't done it yet, why not donate right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we only need 8 more people to join in during the next 4 minutes, and we'll meet our goal. You know, these hourly goals are set up to make sure that we have the funding for the programs that you enjoy. So make your donation now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Paul Segan's done a great job answering a whole variety of questions relating to trees. And I think it's a good example of the kind of shows we do here on Garden Talk. How is your life enriched by Garden Talk? How is it unique to public radio? Here we are, listener supported. And that means when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make Garden Talk and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and then make your gift.
And this is just in, Larry. We only need 3 more gifts to make our goal.
We're
gonna
do
so
that.
Close. Absolutely. And remember, when you do that, you can put your best foot forward when you ask for the new WPR socks. And you just have to give $15 a month or more. And these really nice-looking Argyle-inspired socks will... they basically reflect WPR in Wisconsin. So get your pair today with your gift of $15 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
What I like about Wisconsin Public Radio is that it can brighten my day and help me laugh.
It helps me get outside of my own head.
I love the idea that it's a different perspective. It's a fresh outlook on listening.
Listening to public radio has opened up my mind to all that can be and all that is.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation during our fall member drive. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. The WPR programs you enjoy are possible thanks, of course, to your support. And maybe your contribution is $10 a month, could be $100 a month, could be $200 a month. Whatever amount you choose, it does make a big difference.
It really does. And we've got a minute and 15 seconds, and we're still looking for those three people. So please join in. And when you give, you fund the Larry Mueller Show and Garden Talk and all the other WPR programs that you count on. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to give your gift.
And get those socks.
And get those socks.
I think we should have. I think we should have the party in the summer when we can wear shorts and
sandals with our socks. I don't know. That goes against everything I believe in.
Well, you're just going to have to live with it, Jill. That's all there is to it. We're talking about having a party for those who wear the WPR socks. You can make your gift right now and whatever amount's right for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Joy says something nice about us.
She does, and she's in Wausau. She says, now more than ever, I appreciate non-news programming. The Larry Mueller Show is a wonderful way to get a dose of relaxing, super useful information that makes my home and garden life thrive.
And we always have a lot of fun doing that. Your gift right now is so important. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And thanks so much for supporting us here for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Paul Segan, a forest health specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. He covers the northwest region of the state. Great to have him back. Certainly, if you have a question, you can join in at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And I do want to mention, we're not going to dwell on it, but we have a dollar-for-dollar match right now of up to $4,500. And so let's say you contribute $20 a month, it'd be the same as $40 a month. So keep that in mind and make your contribution at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Double your pleasure. Christina in Glenwood City, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thank you. I live in western Wisconsin near the Twin Cities, and I'm wondering what is the best time to trim maple, ash, and poplar trees? Is it too early? What's the best time?
Have you had any frosts yet there, Christina?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, good question, Christina. So those are all broadleaf deciduous trees, and so they are going to fit in the same camp of when to prune them. And what I would say is within the next month, you could probably get that work scheduled because we're going to expect that things are going to cool down, we're going to get a hard frost or two, and anything that could be a problem, diseases, insects that would otherwise want to visit those wound sites that are created when you prune are going to be pretty much dormant. So and certainly getting ahead of schedule so that usually a lot of arborists like to schedule work ahead of the winter so they don't have kind of a big lull in their work schedule. So probably good to get contacting someone if they're larger trees that you don't think you could handle on your own. But certainly if you're going to handle them on your own, check out some of the web resources available through UW Extension to get a good sense of how to do that in a way that's going to be the most effective for what your desires are for those trees relative to the architecture, relative to any kind of shape you're hoping to promote in those trees.
Yeah. Christina, good luck. Thank you. Connie in Grant County emailed a question. She purchased a Norway spruce in May of 2022. from a tree nursery. She planted it, and they mentioned that she should water it if there's no rain for 10 consecutive days. The tree is mulched. They've not had rain for over a week, and no rain is in the forecast. How long should she keep watering it up to the first hard freeze, she asks?
Oh, probably, yeah, that's a good question. Probably don't want to keep watering it too much after the first frost, because we want to make sure that that tree kind of acclimates to the cold winter weather that's coming. Too much water might kind of slow down that phase of kind of hardening off, we say. So I would recommend after the first frost probably slowing down on the watering. Up into that point, though, using a soaker hose or a drip hose right around that drip line of the tree, which is equivalent to how far out the branches spread on each side, watering that area, we say about an inch of water per week, is a good measure to take, especially if we haven't had rain over the course of a week, for example. Trees can get, they can get a little thirsty after a week of no water, so that would be a good idea. Probably start to seize that activity up and after the first frost.
Thanks again for that question. Bob in Lancaster, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon. I was calling, can a tall tree, you know, quite tall, near a house, can it act like a good lightning rod, or would it attract lightning to hurt the house?
Oh, that is a good question, Bob. I've not got that one ever. I am a camper, and I go up to the Boundary Waters, and I certainly camp, and I think about lightning rod trees while I'm out there and exposed in tent camping next to a large white pine or a large jack pine, but I've not thought about that in the context of a homeowner. I don't think I can answer that question. I don't know if there'd be any risk of that. I haven't heard of that, though.
No, I haven't either. I did at one point in my life. I lived next to a tree that was quite a bit larger than the house, and it got nailed right kind of down the middle of the tree. It got nailed. The house didn't get hurt, but I don't know if the lightning would have hit the house if the tree hadn't been there or not, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess we're not sure. I guess we're not sure. It wouldn't hurt, probably.
It probably wouldn't hurt. It probably wouldn't hurt. And I think the bigger thing with a situation like that, because I think something like this would be pretty uncommon, would be to instead look at the tree's general health to see if it's got any indications of defect on it that could compromise its structural integrity next to that structure. You know, trees growing next to houses, they can add benefits. Shade, they can add primarily shade. That's one of the big ones, certainly deciduous trees, and if placed at the right orientation. But we also come with some liabilities when they're so close. And so I would look at that tree more on the frame of, does it have certain issues that would make it a hazard up against my house here? And that's probably the lens I would look at it through.
Yeah, there you go, Bob. Thank you so much. Speaking of tall trees, Betty emailed us. They had a 100-foot cottonwood tree cut down in December of 2021, and the trunk was ground down. No herbicide applied to the trunk or the remaining roots. Now they have suckers in their yard, and even they've gotten into the neighbor's yard, the suckers. She wonders how to kill the suckers. Would you apply a concentrated Roundup or triclopyr to the leaves or something else?
Yeah, I think so. That's what I would think. You've got a real stubborn root system there that's trying to hang on. It's putting out these suckering stems. And so looking at a heavy-duty Roundup or something like a Garlon 4 or something with triclopyr, which is a heavy-duty brush herbicide, would probably knock back those sprouts and might do good to start to kill that root system as it's sort of slowly dying out there and trying to make a last-ditch effort to produce some suckers. I would definitely look at the herbicide label, make sure you're applying it in the right context and following that label. But I think those are two compounds that could probably deal with that problem, the Roundup and then the triclopyr.
Bill emailed us. He's wondering if you could discuss the problems with ash trees now, you know, the emerald ash borer and everything else.
It's, it, yeah, it, you know, Absolutely. Ash tree is it's a loaded question because there's a lot going on with ash trees right now. But the biggest, most problematic factor we have is the arrival of emerald ash borer in Wisconsin back in the early 2000s. And so what this has done is it's created a lot of problems for trying to grow ash in the long run, both in the forest setting and certainly at the ornamental tree landscape setting. And so if we're going to hope to have ash in the future, we need to think about treating trees with an insecticide. And there's a few different products available depending on the size of the tree, the type of setting you're going to be applying the insecticide in, that are very effective at controlling emerald ash borer in ash trees. In the forest setting, we don't talk about using insecticides because it's really not practical at scale. For those type of settings, we're looking more at trying to adapt the forest to a non-ash state in a way that's kind of graceful, transitioning away from ash through harvesting and promoting non-ash species. But I think far and away, emerald ash borer is going to be the leading problem that ash are going to face. If that can be dealt with, there's a few other more benign issues that happen with ash. We sometimes see ash flower gall, which is the formation of kind of a circular-like, it's several inches across, type of a gall that can form in the ash, usually in the spring, but that's really considered benign and not a problem. We also get ash anthracnose, which can be an issue, where leaves start to get a little bit wilted and can die and fall off. That can be a minor stress of ash trees, but you know, usually ash are not too prone to many things, and that explains why they become so prolific, both in the landscape and then in the forest setting to some extent too. But you know, if you're going to think about keeping ash in a landscape situation, really important to start thinking about planning to do insecticide treatments to protect those ash. And the UW Extension has a wide variety of resources that can help you identify if that ash is at a state where it's maybe time to start treating it based on closest known location of emerald ash borer, whether or not that tree is even worth treating, because maybe it's got quite a bit of infestation and much of the crown would have trouble really growing back after the treatment. And then considering, is it a product that you could use yourself as a homeowner, or is it something you would contact a service provider like an arborist to use more of an injection, which is a kind of a more targeted and effective at larger stemmed ash. So whole host of issues to consider with emerald ash borer, but there's definitely hope if you want to invest in protecting your individual trees in a yard or landscape setting from the emerald ash borer.
Terry in Grand County just wondered, hey, are ash trees going to become extinct in the U.S.? Can that ash borer also attack very young ash trees?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I get it a lot. What we're looking at as far as what ash are susceptible to the emerald ash borer, it's about anything about the size of your wrist or bigger is when they start to attack those trees. So we are looking at probably 99% of the ash to become killed by emerald ash borer, but we are seeing in areas of Michigan and other states in the upper Midwest quite a bit of regeneration of young ash coming back. And so that provides a little bit of a glimmer of hope. And meanwhile, the state DNR Forest Health Program has been involved with the release of federally vetted teeny tiny wasps that parasitize the eggs or the larvae of emerald ash borer. And what this effectively equates to is once the emerald ash borer has come through and the population has reached it's kind of blown up, these little parasitic wasps, they come in and they kind of dampen the population of EAB, and once that population falls, it's a lot harder for that EAB population to rebound when these parasitoids are established. And so the hope is that they can keep the carrying capacity of emerald ash borer down to a level where we do get some of these ash that are growing in some places very, very profusely, starting to grow and produce seed, so we get subsequent generations of ash that can occur on the landscape, not at the level it did in the past, but at some level where we still can keep ash stems and still provide for some of the benefits. They provide food for a whole host of different invertebrate insects and other wildlife, so we don't want to see ash go away. And there's pretty good hope that it probably won't, but it will be vastly lower in abundance than it once was.
Let's take a call from Becky in Eau Claire. Hi, Becky.
Hi. I have a small birch stand that I planted last year, and it's doing
quite well. I've got four main stems that are growing up, and they're about an inch in diameter. And then I have two other skinny ones that are kind of suckers off the side, and I'm wondering if I should trim them.
So they are they growing in a clump?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a clump that we've got here, Paul.
Yeah, Becky, is that clump emerging right from the ground level, or do those branches grow a little bit off the ground where they start to diverge into multiple branches or stems?
The four larger ones come from the ground up. I planted them. I bought them like that. But the two skinnier ones now are coming from right above, about an inch above the ground, like suckers.
Okay. Yeah. I'd say for the clump that's growing right out of the ground, that would be a fairly natural characteristic for birch to grow in. They often can grow in clumps like that. And I think it makes a really nice landscape appearance. So I would not be adverse to keeping those all of those individual stems intact there. But one thing I would look at with that other one that has, it's a single stem that comes out and a few inches up from the ground, it splits into multiple stems. There might be an opportunity there to do some pruning of any of the smaller limbs that are coming out and promoting just the single individual stem that you want to see become that tree. And you might call that training. You're training a little bit for a straight terminal leader. And so that would be something to do to promote more of a tree structure and a better branch, you know, branch formation over the long run. So that's what I recommend with that. With the cluster, you'd probably leave that as is.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Becky, for calling. Appreciate it. And, Paul, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, absolutely, Larry.
Paul Segan, Forest Health Specialist with the Wisconsin DNR, our guest today on Garden Talk. Jill Nadeau's come back in the studio. She's got her chainsaw, and she's ready to do a little cutting here. Don't start it up now, Jill. Wait till after the show's over. It's because we're in our fall member drive, and we got to get that work done first. You rely on the Ideas Network for informative, interesting talk, and we rely on you to keep programs like Garden Talk going strong.
I know my way around a chainsaw, Larry. My dad sold them for years, so...
I know.
I think we're good. You know, listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs, and that's why your gift of any amount right now makes an important difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And right now we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $4,500, and we need to get that by 1 o'clock today. This generous match is from current members, including Gene and Madison, who loves WPR.
Yay, Gene.
And, of course, what does that mean, Jill?
Well, it means that they'll match every dollar that you give, and it's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So double your support right now. It's a great opportunity at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Master gardeners can get continuing education credit for listening to Garden Talk. And I think that just goes to show what a valuable resource Garden Talk is to listeners like you. You can enjoy the show every week, whether you're an expert or just starting out.
Yes, a shout out to those master gardeners. And we love your support by listening. We love your support by giving us a call. Because we have some of the best gardeners in our state right here in our studio or on the phone to answer your questions, whether it's about fruit trees, organic gardening, rose bushes, house plants, we cover it all. So help Garden Talk grow right now by making your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And here we are. Today is $5 Friday, so you can ask for your new WPR tote bag when you give $5 a month or more. It's USA-made cotton tote, features a vibrant navy and orange design. Looked at it. It is pretty. It celebrates everything you love about WPR, the high-quality news, the Garden Talk program, all have a Wisconsin perspective. And this special offer is only available today. So if you give $5 a month or more, you can ask for that tote bag at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and your contribution is doubled.
It is double. That is such a great value. One listener made their donation and said, we could live without WPR, though we sure wouldn't want to.
That's so good. True. I like that.
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe you feel the same way, that listening to WPR makes your life better.
And it might be listening to the news or the music or Garden Talk. A lot of people tune in specifically to hear Garden Talk on Fridays or on Saturday mornings. And always something good to listen to.
Yeah, because WPR makes your life better. So help keep it going. Your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202 is so important.
And thank you very much for spending some time with us at Wisconsin Public Radio. And you might have found us by scanning the dial, or maybe a friend recommended the news or a particular program like Garden Talk. You still tuned in because you like what you hear.
Yes, because you like what you hear. Help pay for your WPR listening. And you choose the amount. Maybe it's $100 or maybe it's $10 a month. Whatever amount is right for you is a great starting point. So become our next donor at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, we ask you to decide how much to give. And no matter what you choose, you get 24 hours a day of news, talk, music, and entertainment in return. That's a great deal. Where do you wish you could get that kind of deal?
Just about anywhere. My education, a vacation, or anything really I could think about spending, I wish I could choose to pay.
Oh, beer?
A great Italian meal.
During this pledge drive, we ask you to contribute as generously as you can. And, unlike with other things, you'll always be the one to decide how much to give.
And no matter how much you want to give, I hope you'll do it right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau, and your support is the biggest source of funding for our shows, the ones you rely on, and that's why your gift... Maybe it's $10 a month. Maybe it's $100. Imagine if you spent, contributed $100 a month. That would be $200 a month because we've got that matching.
We do. And Larry, there's a lot of money still out there waiting to be matched. And so we got to take advantage of that.
Very easy to do, too.
It's very easy. All we need is your name, your contact info, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
Just takes a couple of minutes to make your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio on those couple of minutes, fund your daily listening. So your support right now really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And as the donor, you get to decide how much to give. And maybe $100 or $200 a month is the right amount for you.
That might be what you spend every month on takeout or entertainment, for example, things you enjoy. The important thing is that you decide what amount is right for you, and then make your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And that dollar-for-dollar match still in effect.
It's still in effect, up to $4,500 in effect right now. It's a great time to donate. It's from current members, including Gene and Madison, who loves WPR, and they'll double every dollar that you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. Double the impact of your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Mari said something nice about us.
She did. She says, and she's in Pulaski, and she says, I love Larry Mueller and want to show my support.
Well, I hope you will show your support. It's a good vote for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. If you haven't given, do it right now. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. If you've already given, thank you so much. If you haven't given yet, do it right now before the end of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening.